Hello everyone, Oscar here. Before the show starts, I have something to tell you. Unfortunately, the audio in the roughly the first half of the show, basically our introduction to the show and then leading into our 10 till 6 of our top 10 films of 2016, we didn't notice until after that point when we take that break, which we do at that halfway in there, we noticed that the audio went bad and you know, some of the equipment got messed up, or a combination of maybe that with the connection with Luke, who is you know, across state lines, and we're trying to figure this remote podcasting thing out. Anyway, it is a quality that is definitely less than usual. You can still listen to it, and you can still like understand what we're saying, and it's overall okay. My voice is a little louder than Roth's because I think his we replaced this mic too. I think his mic was the older. You know, just a bunch of things. So it was a major, major apologies for that. It will not happen again. It will be rectified in a more cautious fashion in the future. So that way we actually have time to rectify it in the moment rather than record an entire section and not schedule enough time for us to redo it if we had to, which we couldn't. So this is just a little warning for that. But the audio does get insanely better right after that, of course, which is, you know, the equivalent of what you often hear from this, from our show here. So we apologize again for the inconvenience. I hope you enjoy the show. And please send feedback to us about the show and everything else. That'd be great. Thanks and enjoy the show.
It's okay. It's okay. He won't hurt us. He would have killed me by now. Okay? I think it's because we're not actually part of the movie. He doesn't really know what to do with us.
Welcome to another movie podcast, a show dedicated to love films you never see and most likely detest the ones that you have. I'm Oscar, and with me today is...
Luke.
And Ralph.
Today is episode number 15, and today's show will be the mega show of 2016, the top 10 films of last year. Finally, maybe much anticipated. Either way, top 10 shows are usually the biggest thing going on in movie podcasts every year, or at the end of the year, or at the beginning of the next year, in our case. So that's what we're doing today, and we're having a lot of little things in between, and it's going to be fun, just the three of us. You know why we waited this long to do the show? Dwarf, can you guess why?
We procrastinate.
Procrastinate? Well, a little bit of that. Also, we're not part of any magazine or critic society, so we don't get screeners for movies that other, you know, almost every other person that does this for money can do, or big enough. So we have to wait, like a lot of weeks for like films to come out on VOD / in theaters. Like we had to wait, like you know, like Scorsese's movie. We had to wait for others. I gave you some examples, but off the top of my head, I can't think of any. So, and we just needed to catch up properly to actually give you a full assessment of last year, I think. So that's why we waited a little bit longer for that. Anyway, feedback can always be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com, and otherpodcast.com is our website. You can check out all these lists in order and all the rankings and how it goes with all our guest hosts. In this case, just the three of us on that website. And you can follow the show itself on Twitter at podmoviecast as well. Detailed show notes will be available for all the timestamps for this particular show. We're going to cut it down to like 10 to 6, and then 6 to 5. I mean 5 to 1s, and then our honorable mentions and so on. Everything will be detailed there, so you can follow the show and skip around if you want. Also, remember that this month's bonus episode is Martin Scorsese's newest film, Silence, which we haven't seen yet as of this date of recording. Wow, we got to see that movie. It's almost out of theaters, so we got to watch that soon. And we won't be talking about what we've been watching because it's going to be a long enough show as it is. So, before we get started with the actual countdown, guys, how do you guys feel about films in 2016? Luke, let's start with you. How did you feel about the year?
Overall, I think I saw a lot less movies than I did the years prior. But I think most of them were pretty much really good picks.
Did you feel like... do you feel that way, like in comparison to other years, or do you feel like this year, you know, how it's been of a downer year, not just because of, I'm not going to bring up election stuff, but also the deaths of a lot of celebrities? Do you feel like it's mirrored with the movies we've been watching in 2016 that were released, or is it just like any other old year, good movies and that's it?
I think more good movies this year than years prior.
Ralph?
So yeah, I'm gonna agree with I'm gonna agree with Oscar, I guess, or Luke, sorry. Where this movie this year, I think, is a lot of great movies. But I was listening to another podcast, one of them were saying on the other podcast that this movie this year was a movie of great movies, but you had to go search for them. You had to go actually, like, I think we did a lot more traveling to those theaters, those niche theaters that we had to so we can watch certain movies, because they were only in like certain theaters. They're one in wide releases, but there was really good quality stuff out there. Yeah, it was a bit of a downer year altogether, but I'm also looking back at my list and I'm just like, man, there's a lot of good movies in the first half of the year. And like, I didn't even think, I also like end of the year, I was just, there was so much that happened this year. Maybe, I don't know, it's just me or something, but it also felt like, wow, we also did a lot of, like, I felt like a lot of these movies came out last year. That's how long ago it felt like. Which technically where we're recording, it did come out last year. But I meant like 2015, not 2016.
2015, right. Yeah. Well, that's funny. I noticed that there are every year in movies, there seem to be trends go on. This year's trends have been, man, a shit ton of animated movies. Not just a shit ton of, like, you know, regular run of the mill animated movies, but like a lot of them are really, really good. And like still like hailed, like she's called specifically recent. You got Moana, you got Zootopia from way earlier in the year. You got, like, Anomalisa, which I know is considered to be a 2015 movie, but it really got released in major public theaters in late January of 2016, so I counted. And that's an animated, critically darling, even though no one saw it, movie. Kubo and the Two Strings, April and the Twisted World, Sausage Party was, like, an adult movie. Like, a lot of good year for animated movies. Also a good year for musicals, obviously. La La Land has that comeback. Moana is the first Disney movie comeback with musicals, as a musical that, in its, you know, old style form. Popstar, I think, also did a lot for musicals and making fun of it. Sing Street, even though it isn't one, but it has, some great, like, music in it that's a part of it. The Jungle Book tried to be a musical with two songs in it, but not really. That was weird. And another great year for also was documentaries. I don't know if you guys agree with me. Did you guys see many documentaries this year, 2016? Luke?
I saw a couple. I saw a couple of them. Not as many as I hoped have caught my attention, but a few good ones. Unfortunately, most of them pretty much didn't make my list.
Yeah, I know. We all saw each other's, but I expected more in there for sure.
I honestly, my 11 through 20 is pretty much a lot more documentaries.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah.
Ralph, did you were able to see much in documentaries?
I mean, around the normal amount that I usually watch.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest other trend of 2016, before we go on to our top 10 here, is sucky blockbusters, big movies, studio movies that did poorly or were received poorly by its audiences. And obviously the one I think of the most is like Batman v Superman, Suicide Squad. Even though like the run-of-the-mill Joe, who only watches like two movies a year, they probably love Suicide Squad. But it's not hailed very well, and no one really liked it overall. And you get other movies like Magnificent Seven, which bombed. Warcraft bombed. Jason Bourne, I heard, was terrible. I haven't seen it. Assassin's Creed, I heard, was terrible. I haven't seen that either. Other movies that were, like, really good, studio movies that didn't make enough money, I think. For example, like, London Has Fallen. I still think it's kind of a fun movie. Probably the most fun, you know, unabashedly B-movie in action of the year. Ghostbusters got a bad rap for no reason. It was so controversial. I'm like, they're just women, guys. Can we get over it and just watch the movie? That's how I felt, anyway. Allegiant was terrible. 13 Hours. You know, like, a lot of these movies are kind of failed.
Get over it, guys. Women are funny now.
In making money. Right, yeah. In making money or making audiences like them. So, that's the movie trends of the year. Now, let's get into our top 10 movies of the year. Here's how we're going to do it, guys. So, similar to our top 10 TV shows, which wasn't done very well, Rob. You and I can admit to that. I think that what we're going to do is that we have our list in advance. We're not going to surprise each other. You might be surprised by my pick because I didn't give you guys my list.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I sent it to you in a text, but I don't know if
you
better.
That's not helpful.
Yeah, well. Here's what we're going to do is that if a movie comes up, let's say my number 10 is Desierto. And it's Luke's number one movie of the year. And so I would say, like, oh, this is my number 10, but we're going to wait until it comes up again, you know, and then we can all talk about it communally with the other person that has it. Right?
Right.
So we're all good there. And also, some movies are eligible from last year in 2015 that were released in 2016. I'm not saying this will reflect in any of our lists, but I think one of my picks is one of those movies that were released, like, I think in North Korea, or South Korea, sorry, not North, South Korea, in 2015, but didn't really come out until this year for American audiences. So shit like that, we have to kind
of
walk
around. Yeah, I have one of those movies I've read.
What have you been doing?
I have been living a life in which I have tried to become a better human being. And that's as much as I'm interested in saying to you about it.
This is a place of healing. Right here it is, Krisha. This is it. You can say anything, anytime, anywhere. You let me know. When it's all said and done, I'm married to your goddamn sister in there, and I'm family.
Thank you. And I appreciate the offer. And as soon as I have anything really incredibly revealing that I want to say, I will definitely come right to you and say it, dude.
Well, I'll tell you what. You can write it down, and I'll read it later.
Okay.
Shut up!
Very subtle.
Not bad.
So, without further ado, Raf, I think you're starting us off. You're drawing first blood. Are you ready, sir?
I can be as soon as IMDb pops up. And I'm ready.
All right. What is your number 10 movie of 2016?
So my number 10 is actually, like, really close to my number 11. But it's snuck in there regardless. And this is Disney's Moana.
Moana?
Yeah, so this is a movie directed by Ron Clements. There's three other people in this, apparently, but I'm going to just go with the other one, who is John Musker, who they're kind of a pair, dynamic duo. I will tell you the quick biography of these two guys, who are directors for all the Disney movies as well. They did Princess and the Frog together, Treasure Planet, Hercules.
Yeah, they did.
Aladdin, Little Mermaid, Great Mouse Detective. These are amazing movies, in my opinion, of course.
Right.
And they worked together on all of those projects before. And coming on this one, you can see some of those movies, or a lot of those movies, actually, influences in this movie, Moana. And this is a lot of back to form for Disney, a Disney musical. You know, it's a Disney princess still, right?
Right. They even make fun of it. They give a sidekick, you have a dress,
right, exactly,
or whatever.
Right, They have, And it's a typical story. Like, she needs to... almost a coming of age story also for her.
No, it is, for sure.
It's really cool to watch. I actually just, this movie kind of snuck in there for me just because of the fact that the music.
And you were before when we talked about it, you said that I hyped it up too much for you.
You did hype it up too much for me, but this movie was, after deliberating myself, it ended up working out. The music kind of got stuck in my head, and I think
that's
what I liked about it. That's what snuck it into number 10. I gotta say, the voice acting obviously was done great. I can't say the virtual acting was done great. It was.
Right, the voice acting.
The voice acting was done really well.
Through The Rock. I think all the actors, except for one, all the voice actors are actually from that region.
Sure.
That the movie is taking
most
place.
Most of them are, yeah.
No, I think all but one.
Oh, is it?
Even The Rock is from there.
Yeah, well, I know The Rock is
from
there, sure. Well, all the important characters, right? The main ones.
No, even all of them.
Well, crab is not from the Netherlands, I think.
But he's, he's from New Zealand.
Or New Zealand, my apologies.
I think so. Yeah,
he is. You know, we've seen him in.
What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, What We Do in the
Shadows. And the Wildebeest movie. Yeah.
Regardless, I had fun with watching this movie. I watched this movie with my son, and I did enjoy it overall the whole ride. Like I said, it was a little bit hyped up for me, like you said, but it was still a really good movie. I mean, it's well done. It's Disney at its truest form, or what we're so used to, Disney being a powerhouse in general, what they're so good at doing. And I think they did a really great job doing it. I had to think about it overall. I did like it. And I had to see how much did I like it over other Disney movies that came out this year, because it was a good movie. It was a good year for Disney.
Damn straight.
So that's my number 10, Moana. It's a great movie. You should totally watch it. Great music in it. The Rock and Sea, that's one of my favorite songs of the year.
Yeah, it is. So,
that's my number 10.
Have you seen Moana yet, Luke, or no?
No, I think they have it in like a theater like 60 miles away from where I am right now.
Oh man, if it was 58 miles, I would say it's worth it, but not to
right.
Not
no, I mean, miles, no. It, like the closest theater I have is 30 miles up a mountain in the snow.
Oh my god, you're living in The Shining, is what you're doing.
Yeah, in a nutshell,
you could totally tell your kids in the future that you had to climb up a mountain 30 miles away.
Oh yeah! Now you can use that excuse for real, Luke.
You know what? No, off topic. We tried to go to see the Fences movie.
Oh yeah!
And it was a fucking whiteout that even the bus driver couldn't see.
Really?
So we had to turn back around and go back home because they weren't going to have bus service because it went to emergency mode.
Yeah. Well, I think it might have made your top 10. It's not on your. I know it's not on your top 10, but I think it might have because Fences is a pretty powerful, crazy movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I'll hope to see it.
You don't know. Cause you
when the weather clears up, I'll hope to see it.
Yeah, we get it. All right, so my number 10 and 10, 10 and 1 are probably the hardest for me to make these lists because they are, number 10 could be like all the other movies you liked, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like that slot.
I want to agree right? 100% with number 10 with you, but my number 1 this year was actually a really easy pick.
My number 1 snuck up on me. I thought I had my number 1 for a long time, and then it switched.
My number 2, 3, and 4 were impossible to make. Like,
oh, really?
They're interchangeable for me. Like,
yeah, maybe me too for 3, 4, 5 for me. Anyway, so without further ado, my number 10 is a movie I can't really talk about, but I'll mention the title. It is Oliver Stone's latest film, the biopic called Snowden, which you know was recommended very highly by Luke earlier in the year, and I saw it, and I really loved it. I did talk about it briefly in our last review episode, 2 episodes ago. And but I'll talk about it more because somebody else has it on their list. So I'll wait till then to talk about it. So, Luke, what's your number 10?
My number 10 is I Saw the Light, the Hank Williams biopic.
Wow, because, you love country that much, huh?
If it's not a documentary, it's a biopic. Yeah, actually, I didn't really know anything about Hank Williams until I saw this movie. I just heard that Tom Hiddleston was going to be playing an American country singer.
Yeah, I almost saw this movie just like 2 days ago. It was on TV, and I didn't have it on demand, so I didn't want to start it off where it was. But I thought it didn't get that well reviewed.
It did not. It got shit on. But honestly, I really loved his performance, and it's just... I believe that like that was Hank Williams, you know, then that was...
Yeah, this British actor.
Right. You can pull that shit off.
Yeah, what's with the Brits knowing how to pull off fucking Southern accents?
Really good.
I know. It's crazy. But it's definitely...
I think this is a year for music in general. Music and movies. It's just such a big influence.
Such a big comeback this year or last year. Yeah, very strange.
Yeah, I love it though.
Nice. I saw the light. I saw it too. And I did see a light in it, so you're right, I saw it too. So that's your number...
Good to know.
Yeah, number 10. Now we're up to number 9.
But whatever, I'll call it.
No, it's fine. I know.
It is a 7-hour and 47-minute movie. That is O.J. Made in America. This is the 5 movies, hour and a half long each, or give or take.
Yeah.
Documentary, biography, like, crime drama epic of ESPN, directed by... Ezra Edelman, and Ezra had all of the leeway to do whatever the hell, he wanted for this, and I think he did a great job. It came out, you really wonder what's going to happen in the first movie, and it sets up everything about O.J., and if anybody doesn't know about O.J. or about the crime of the century for the 20th century, right. It explains everything, I think. To a great detail, it gets you in the head. It gets you in the mindset of a lot of OJ and a lot of the other people, and it kind of sets up the whole crime, how it happened, where it went, how he got out of it. Spoiler, and where he is now. I don't think we needed that last movie, but I do appreciate what he did for it or why it was there.
Oh yeah.
I it's just a powerful movie. And I know Luke, you are in love with documentaries. And I know it's a 30 for 30 ESPN film, so I have it on Blu-ray. I'm more than willing to send it out to you if you want it.
Maybe. I do want to watch it, at least the first episode. See if it gets me hooked.
So, I mean, if you want to watch it, man, I highly recommend this.
I do too, man.
Such a great movie. Such a great five episodes.
It made my number two of the best television shows of the year, because I consider it a TV series, because a miniseries for me is still a show. But I don't know. It's pulling either way, pulling hairs. All the same, still great. Put it in.
Yeah, that's why I call it my cheat.
It's a movie, so it's fine. So that's your number nine, and we're on to my number nine. My number nine is yet another movie that somebody else in this group of ours has as well. It's Green Room, the latest by that dude that did Blue Ruin a few years back, which I think made my top 10 that year as well, and I think it made.
Yeah.
I think so, Luke.
I think it made most of our top 10s, I think.
Like, damn, this is such, you know, subverting genre exercise that's really good. And he does it again in an equal, if not maybe more powerhouse moment of intensity in also, Green Room.
Also,
but I'll talk about it. Also, very music heavy, yes. So I'll talk about it later. Yeah, that's another one. We'll talk about it when it comes up.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's another one, yeah.
So that's my number nine, Green Room. Luke, you're number nine.
All right, my number nine, which you kind of mentioned earlier, is Warcraft.
Really?
And I know, yes.
I mean, listen, I really like that movie. I don't hate it. I appreciate everything that movie does. But
you guys are very few, by the way.
I'm glad.
Well, okay, so very few here, but a lot in China.
Right.
Yeah, but anyway, I think Dunk... A lot.
True.
They make you all the electronics in your room.
Yeah, that's true.
They're listening to you. Anyways, so I mean, look, Duncan Jones had quite a feat to, you know, accomplish here, because you're going into a franchise that's three video games deep, has one of the biggest MMOs out there, tons of lore, and you're going to try to, you know, consolidate all that and be like, hey, here's your intro into this world. I thought it was amazing how he pulled it off. I mean, granted, there are problems with the movie, especially with the beginning and the constant, like, introducing of new characters, but after that, it's pretty seamless.
Yeah, problems at the beginning, middle, and end, yeah.
It's just, no, shut up.
So this is your... Would you consider this the movie, the game, video game movie done right, the only one, you know, because...
I haven't seen Assassin's Creed yet, because obviously, where I am, it's not an option.
They don't like video game movies down there? Or up there? Wherever the fuck you are?
No.
Overseas in Tahiti, right?
No, nothing like that here. But yeah, it is one of the ones done better than what the norm is. It's not, you know, Mario Brothers.
Well... Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is 100% true. Yeah. All right, I agree with that completely. And I remember, when I think about the scenes of the year, a few of those action scenes do come up from Warcraft in my head, because they were very visually striking, I remember.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, so that's your number nine. We're on to Ruff. Yep. Ruff, what's your number eight?
My number eight is higher on somebody else's list. So, but my number eight, regardless, is Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
I wonder who else has it. Huh?
I will say just a quick thing. it was a great movie. I wish I could put this higher, but it just shows how much amazing movies there were this year.
That's true. I will give you that for sure. That's for sure. That's your number eight. Rogue One, we'll wait to talk about it later. Oh, finally, one of my movies that isn't mentioned somewhere else yet. My number eight is a film called Krisha. Has anybody seen it?
Everybody take a quick 5-minute break. He's going to go on a rant. No.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you, Ruff. You know me so well. Krisha is a film. I don't have the information pulled up because we're using our phones for this call thing, so I'm just going to play it off my head. But it's not a big deal. I don't remember the guy's name. But the movie is currently available to stream for free if you're an Amazon Prime, I guess. So not for free, but if you're an Amazon Prime member. Krisha, K-R-I-S-H-A. I remember because when I first heard it, I'm like, how do you spell that? Krisha is a character piece portrayal set in one day on Thanksgiving by, you know, through the eyes of this woman, this older woman called Krisha, who's invited back for the first time in what you can assume is many years, back to her home to cook the Thanksgiving dinner. And the reason she hasn't been called in before is because she is a very mean and drunk woman that's been kind of like, even and very old too, who's been kind of like let into the household. Like, she doesn't talk to her son in forever. Like, they had a falling out that you can't even begin to understand. Oh, here's a plus notice. Thank you, Ralph. Krisha returns for Thanksgiving dinner after 10 years. There you go. Away from her family, but past demons threaten to ruin the festivities. And I will say that besides the acting performances, which if it's on my list, you know that acting's like, it's got to be fucking spot on for me to love it. It is so amazing. That actress who plays Krisha knocks everyone out. I want her for best performance of the year almost, maybe. Let's see. Her name is actually Krisha Fairchild, which makes me wonder if it's autobiographical. But it's been directed by Trey Edward Schultz. And it's really good. And Trey Edward Schultz's direction and camera movement is so... like, it's so spot on. It's like a kinetic requiem for a dream, if you want to call it that. It's so visionarily made well. It's just striking. The music is so like weird and well placed at times, and it's just really good. I really highly recommend that. I don't want to spoil too much. So you can't spoil a movie where it's like a character driven piece, but like, it's really harrowing. I was watching it. I was glued to the screen the whole time. And man, I was just like so fearful for everything that was going to happen. So that's Krisha. It's on Amazon Prime, like I said. And that's my number eight. Luke, what's your number eight?
My number eight is the only documentary that I have.
Oh, yeah. It's true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It is Michael Moore's Where to Invade Next.
Nice. Tell us about that.
Basically, Michael Moore travels to different countries and pretty much shows us how they are doing certain aspects right. Like, you go to Italy and you have, like, amazing labor rights. You have paid holidays, paid honeymoons. You have a 13-month salary, two-hour lunch breaks, paid parental leave, and all that stuff. You know, in France, you have amazing school meals, proper sex education for kids. In Finland, you have one of the best education policies. The kids don't have homework. They don't have to worry about standardized testing.
Places where people actually care about our future?
Right. Oh, and it's like these small aspects that we can change. I mean, like, Finland said that they tried to mimic our teaching system, but yet they are doing it so much better than we are. Right. So,
well, yeah. Also, Finland, I mean, then, you know, population of, like, Chicago. So
right, and then you go to, like, he goes to Slovenia, Germany, Portugal, Norway, Tunisia, and Iceland. So I mean, all these countries are doing certain things right, and we could be doing them too. But you know, politics,
and some sort of weird what number one aggression that we have.
Right.
Yeah. That movie was something. How did you see it? Did you see it as a positive film, or is that like or more of a fuck you to us? How did you feel about that?
It's not more of a fuck you to us. It's more of a, like, hey, wake up kind of thing. Like, look at what we're doing in other, like, we influence these other countries and they are doing it so much better than us. Mm-hmm. We need to stop thinking of ourselves as we're the best at everything, and we need to start criticizing ourselves the way we do things in order to become a better society.
Yeah, cool. No, that's why I got out of it too, making sure. So that's Where to Invade Next. I'm sure you can buy it anywhere. It came out earlier in the year of 2016, like in March or something. So you can find it somewhere out there. So that's your number eight. Yep. We're on to Roth. And this is why I love Roth. And you too, Luke, you have a movie or two that I really wanted to put on my list. And Roth is about to mention one that I wanted on my list, but I couldn't put it in there. Just didn't make it. Roth, what's your number seven?
Because I love cheating so much, I decided to add a movie that technically came out in 2015, but it was exclusive to England only.
Right.
And it came out to the States for us in 2016. Mm-hmm. And that being said, that movie is The Dresser. I apologize for clearing my throat there. Directed by Richard Eyre. It's a quick synopsis.
Which is our third podcast was on The Dresser, or the second one?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
A drama based on a successful play about an aging actor and his personal assistant. This starring Emily Watson, Ian McKellen, Sarah Lancashire, and Sir Anthony Hopkins, or Anthony Hopkins, yes, sir. There's obviously other people, but this movie was super impactful to me watching it. I love the acting that Anthony Hopkins and Ian McKellen. I mean, everybody really puts a great performance here, but Anthony Hopkins, I really felt like I need to watch all of his work from here on out, just for the fact that, like, I felt like I'm going to lose him so soon.
Right.
Because he was aged more in the movie, obviously. But at the same time, yeah.
Similar to Ian McKellen aged up from that Sherlock movie
and
he made.
And it made me, yeah. Right, exactly. And it just made me, like, really enjoy. And I kind of want to see a Broadway with them. But I know they do Broadway also.
They have done, yeah.
So, and I would love to watch them work on in the theater. Because these guys are just amazing at what they do, and someone of that age, both of these men, to pull such great performances and still captivate someone as young as me, or
like Shakespeare, like, you know, we're not lords of Shakespeare.
Sure, exactly.
Fuck, okay, I don't even like reading the fucking guy.
I guess common folk,
but,
right?
Yeah.
More common folk than
the layman.
Right. Yeah. It just really captivated me. And just great performances all around. And it was just, I really enjoyed this movie. And I'm so glad that Luke kind of just like, I'm going to dig through this pile of movies and just like.
Right, and find something for you guys to watch.
And I was like, oh, I appreciate it, Luke.
Such a good pick, because I never even fucking heard of it, man.
Right.
It was such a good pick for the year. So, yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Yep. Yeah, that's my number 7, man. The Dresser. You should watch this movie.
Because everyone go watch the movie. Yeah.
Amazing performances.
I mean, there's no action, it's just dialogue, but it's good.
It's
so good. So that's number 7. My number 7 is a film that's going to come up again later on in some other list, but I'll mention it anyway. My number 7 is Moonlight, the critical darling that came out. Still might be in some theaters. That's how big it is for an indie movie. It's one of those also play-like movie where it came out of a play that was written a long time ago, I think, and it was adapted for the screen. But I'll save my review for later. That's Moonlight, my number 7, and we're on to Luke. What is your number 7?
My number 7 is Woody Allen's Cafe Society.
That's right. We reviewed this recently. Right?
Yes.
Yes, and I believe came out with the most positive to say about it. So
that's true. You did.
Not to say that we hated it. Just saying.
You almost convinced me, honestly.
But hey, any movie. I mean, this is the movie that I stopped hating Kristen Stewart, and I was like, holy fuck.
Oh, right.
That's right.
So. I'm actually going to give her a shot from now on because, I mean, she was amazing in it. So was Jesse Eisenberg. You know, it's one of your typical Woody Allen flicks where, you know, you have a pretty standard plot line, but there's a small twist in it. But I really enjoyed this one. I love the consequences the characters had to deal with, which was, you know, being in love with each other but committing to their own personal lives. Because in any other movie, it would be the opposite. They would be breaking up with their wife or spouse and, you know, running off together.
Right, but these are victims of that, right? Isn't that what it is?
Right.
Or at least one is a victim of it, and they don't want to continue living that kind of life.
So, yeah, I mean, I really thoroughly enjoyed this movie, so.
I don't know, that's your number 7, Cafe Society.
7.
Looks like Woody Allen's still a big deal for you. It's good, because a lot of people have, like, already kind of ignored him, you know, avoided him now. But I still don't. I'll watch all his movies if I could.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably the one that's seen the least amount of Woody Allen flicks in this, you know, on this show, so.
You're not too far from me. Don't worry about it.
No.
He probably got me beat by like 10 at least.
So that's your number 7. Why don't you number 6?
Yep.
Ruff, what's your number 6? This is another movie that I wanted to put on my list, by the way.
My number 6 is a very hopeful movie, I guess, that I want to say. It's a Denis Villeneuve's new latest movie, Arrival. This is the same guy who did Sicario, Prisoners.
I think Sicario made my top 10 that year.
I think it did, yeah.
Or Enemy, maybe. I don't remember.
Yeah. Sure. So this is a movie starring Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, Forrest Whitaker, Michael Stuhlbarg. I'm going to leave it at that. We got aliens in this movie, guys. I mean, who doesn't love aliens? Yay! So I really enjoyed this movie. It brought a sense of hopefulness where the world can work together and share resources with each other to kind of like you know, work on something globally. You know, something that we all say we want to strive for as countries, but I don't think we ever do. And it takes, obviously, extraterrestrials, which I hope it would take extra. I mean, if it ever came down to, we would hope work together to, you know, come right. together as one. And I just really love the whole ride for this movie. I kind of like finding out what ends up happening towards the end and finding out exactly that, oh my God, like everything we've been shown is actually like a weird mix of past, present, and future. So it's really intriguing, and I really enjoyed it, everything about it. And then seeing that that's eventually the world we're going to live in that, which with that weird past, present, and future of realizations. So it was a super cool ride, and I really enjoyed the overall message of the movie. So yeah, that's Arrival.
I'm with you, man. Denis Villeneuve still knocks it out for me, man. He's good. So that's your number six.
Good movie.
Yeah.
It's also on my short list.
Yeah, mine's too, dude. Totally. My number six is a movie that, another one I can review finally. It's called The Lobster. Let me read the thing for you guys. In a dystopian near future, single people, according to the laws of the city, are taken to the hotel where they are obliged to find a romantic partner in 45 days or are transformed into the animals of their choosing and sent off into the woods. This is the latest by Yorgos Lanthimos, the man who brought us a great indie, you know, the discovery film for him, Dogtooth, and then later did Alps. And this is his first English-speaking film. I don't want to say American because even though he does have Colin Farrell who's in it, but he's not American either, but he's famous in America. And Rachel Weisz as well stars them too. And this movie is like a strange movie, and it's a dark, dark comedy that I think works as well as the whatever the darkest chocolate comedy you've ever seen before, except it's done in a more in a savvy anti-societal way. Like, look at society, look at your values, and what does it mean to make fun of it, bring it down, and then bring it up again, hopefully. But Yorgos Lanthimos, and you know, unfortunately, is not so hopeful as all that. If anyone remembers the ending, but I love what he does with the world that he builds in the beginning. And the movie is split into two halves, where in the first half, you understand the movie through the eyes of someone trying to go with society and trying to follow its laws. And the second half goes with that same person's eyes or viewpoint, but going through the anti-values of society, the rebel side of it all, and what they do over there and how everyone characterizes what's important in another partner is clearly what shouldn't be important in finding a lover, but these people seem to strive for finding whatever silly nonsense to have something in common with another, and it's so bizarre and it's so wickedly violent at times, and it's so John C. Reilly's hand in the toaster, and then it's just a weird movie that totally holds up. I managed to see it again, and that's how I was able to, you know, identify it on my list. And I really loved it. I saw it in theaters, and I don't regret it. I'm going to buy this movie probably whenever it's on sale. So that's The Lobster. It's on streaming stuff. I think it's on Amazon Prime as well. Clearly, Amazon Prime has everything right now. So that's my number six. And then we're on to Luke, your number six.
My number six is going to be Doctor Strange.
Dun, dun, dun.
I mean, honestly, it's another Marvel movie, but it's, you know, introducing a whole new character, Doctor Strange, introducing a whole new, you know, power set, bringing of magic into play, you know, on top of all the other stuff they have going for them. And it does such a good job of, you know, bringing Doctor Strange into the Marvel universe.
And were you big into the comics? I forget. I know we reviewed it, but I don't remember.
No, I didn't start reading Doctor Strange till earlier this year, or last year.
Gotcha.
Pretty much
one of the more successful blockbusters of the year.
Definitely. I think it ranked $659 million worldwide.
Yeah. It did well for itself, and it was a really good movie. Also,
it was good and successful. Like it actually merited its money.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That's how.
Unlike some of the other blockbusters, and you know. You got the Batch in there, and this guy just fucking nails it.
Oh, man, I've been watching the newest season of Sherlock. Man, he's so good.
Where is that?
I bought it.
Okay,
you can watch it. You can see it on my iTunes, guys. Yeah, so that's awesome. Doctor Strange, I'm glad it's on here. I'm not saying I would never put it on here. Obviously, I didn't. And it didn't even crack my top 30, because that's how many good movies there are. But, like,
right.
As far as, like, if I had to rank the blockbuster action movies, or yeah, not even action, just the blockbuster big movies, other than Zootopia and Moana, I would be up there with probably number three.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, it was it's well so done good. Because you're...
And so freaky. I mean, yeah, you want to get high almost watching this movie.
I do. Right. Yeah, but like I was trying to say, yeah, it brings in the whole magic element, and it, the way it visualizes is just amazing.
Totally, I agree, man. So that's your number six, Doctor Strange. Real quick, before we take a break, because we'll take a break for the 5-2-1s, let's recap our 10-6. Luke, can you recap them for me?
Just mine?
Yeah, just yours. 10-6.
So 10 was I Saw the Light, mm-hmm. 9 was Warcraft, 8 was Where to Invade Next, 7 was Cafe Society, and 6 was Doctor Strange.
And Roth, recap yours.
I have number 10 at Moana. Number 9 is OJ, Made in America. Number 8 is Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Number 7 is The Dresser. And number 6 was Arrival.
I'm sure it still is. my number 10 is Snowden. 9 is Green Room. Number 8 is Krisha. Number 7 is Moonlight. And number 6 is The Lobster. So those are our 10-6. We're going to take a quick break, guys, where I'll put a clip into one of the best scenes of the year, probably, that I liked a lot. I don't know what yet, because I haven't done it yet. But we're going to come back. When we come back, we'll do our 5-2-1s and all the extra stuff we'll have afterwards. So stay with us.
Say your line exactly as I'm about to. Just as I'm about to do.
Sure. Okay.
Would that it were so simple.
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 My dear boy, why do you say that? Why do you say twere?
Well, you should say it like I said it.
Yes.
Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple. Would that it were so simple.
Watch my mouth. Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple.
Keep your head still. Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple.
I'm trying to say that, Mr. Lawrence.
Lawrence? Hmm?
I thought a minute ago it was Lawrence.
No, we can use Christian names, my good dear boy. Lawrence is fine, just as I call you Herbie.
Okay.
So, would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple.
Would that it were so simple. Trippingly.
Would that it were so simple. Trippingly.
No, don't say trippingly. Say the line trippingly.
And we're back, everyone. And let us start, or continue, I should say, with our 5-3-1s. And, Raf, you are starting us off again. So, what's your number 5?
My number 5 is a movie that was mentioned already, so we're coming to this. And my number 5 is Green Room.
Right, which was my number 9.
Exactly. So. Green Room, directed by Jeremy Saulnier, which is a movie which he did on Blue Ruin the year before, which is his directorial debut, right? Or Blue Ruin?
Yes. No, yeah. Blue. Yeah, it is. No, he did another movie called Murder Party, I think.
Okay.
Before that.
Okay. Yeah. This movie was, Green Room was a really interesting, turn of events kind of movie, where it doesn't go the typical route, but it goes also the route of like how I think I would react. You can totally believe these reactions from the player people.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
You mean like slicing a bouncer's belly open with a box cutter, you would totally do that.
Right, exactly. Right. Yes, I would totally cut that.
I mean, who wouldn't?
Right, that's what I'm saying.
I feel like I want to do it now.
Yeah. And then you have...
After we're done.
Okay.
Right.
And then you have, this cast. I mean, we've seen some of these people, and other people are really big. What's it called? Anton Yelchin, who... The late Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, now. Yeah.
Imogen Poots. Aaliyah Shawkat. That's Shawkat, but...
Always plays like the best friend of the main lead in movies.
Yeah, and Patrick Stewart. We have other people in this as well, but those are our four top-built cast here. Hi, Leo. He came into the room.
Okay, anyway, so I
agree. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So on my end, I know that was on my number 9, but... Sure. That's why I let you go first, by the way. Green Room is, I think it's just super intense. It is some of the most intense moments I've had of the year, for sure. It's a completely just pure genre exercise movie. There isn't, like, an insane amount of stuff it's trying to pack. It's not like, I mean, it has themes and stuff, and it has not just themes about music and what it means to the persons in it, but like, or like, what's your favorite island band, or even other things like about dogs and the fact that the dog survives, and it's like the coolest story just because people love dogs and not really humans. Like, all that stuff is really aside. The thing is just the intensity of being in the locker room and trying to find a way out, and the fact that most of them don't. And the fact that the ones you think will be the biggest villains don't become the villains. The ones that you think will be the biggest heroes, that's the, like the fighter in the group, in the band group, like doesn't make it. He's like the second to die. And people's decisions, even the most smartest decision, can also get you killed. And the dumbest decision can somehow save you by luck. And it all those are a combination of genre tropes put on his head or turned on his head, I think worked so well for me. That, like, if I had to, if this movie didn't exist, 10 Cloverfield Lane might have made it, because it's, I feel like those both movies are very intense and locked in, and
I would probably
they're both really good.
Thing. But I think this movie just does it to, like, a different extreme that is really, like, I don't, something about, like, I would say probably the first 60% of this movie, it's just really, really intense. That you just, you're just like, oh my god, like, it takes you to kind of adapt after a little bit past halfway to the movie. They're just like, man, we're just in it for real. Like we're just in survival mode at this point. And you as the audience, like, don't even know what to expect anymore. And it's a really cool feeling. And I swear, I really enjoyed the ride for this movie. And it made me feel, like I never want to leave my house. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you guys on this one, because this was actually also on my short list, so it didn't make the cut, unfortunately.
Yeah, we all love this movie,
right?
Pretty
right.
Equally. How do you feel about the Luke had a bugaboo about one of the songs in it? Because you know you're a metal guy, Luke. What was the thing you said before?
It wasn't the song. It was that they're all punks, but the guy had a black metal T-shirt.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah, but I like the Nazi punks fuck off scene a lot too. It goes into one of my favorite scenes of the year, just the way they did it, because you're like, don't do that song, you know. But they, you know, they do it, and they manage to come back, and the audience loves them after that. So it's good. It's a really good movie. Green Room. My number 9. Your number 5. The rough, and we're on to myself here with my number 5, and it is one of the earliest films of the year. It's called The Witch, and let me read the description. A family in 1630s New England is torn apart by the forces of witchcraft, black magic, and possession. I would say that what tears a family more apart is mistrust and religious fervor more than the witchcraft itself. Even though the witch is introduced in the first within the first 10 minutes, and you know that it's real, you know that in this world, in this super like precise like period setting world that's like vigorously accurate, the witch is introduced as an element of like a time gone by. Like in the old days, you used to be witches. Now we have no magic, but however it might have been in the past, that's how you feel it looks like. If that's the best way I can say the witch kind of feels to me, and that's what the magic of the movie does for me, is that not only is it like a big suspense building insanity thing, and it's also a film about coming of age for a woman, coming of age for a woman in a repressed setting. I mean, all those three different things I think belong to one whole thing, especially towards the end where you force her to make a decision that you can't blame her for. And I'm not going to spoil the ending, but if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. And I think that all those themes and settings coincide into like this historical fiction that feels probably the most realistic outside of a documentary for me. And The Witch just did that for me, guys. And I know that I know you guys didn't feel the same way about it like I did. But I've seen this movie 3 times already. And even though it's hard to watch again, because it's not one of those, it's not like Civil War. We can just watch it forever and ever. And ever. I mean, the Captain America, not the actual Civil War. But yeah, even though it's not like as fun, I just glued to the screen on this movie the whole time. And everything's like a portrait in this movie too. And the Lucifer scene with the Black Phillip, still one of the most haunting scenes of the year for sure. Maybe my number 1. So yeah, that's The Witch, my number 5. We're on to Luke. All right, now.
Glad somebody liked it.
Right, yeah. I think it definitely fell short for me. And I know Luke, I don't think he liked it at all.
Yeah, I just wasn't really intrigued by it. Well, anyways.
You're not into horror, right? So
I mean, I like certain horrors, but like I said, I just
horrors you like.
It didn't just draw me in.
Pussy horror.
No, I get it. It's not what audiences should have anticipated. It's not like kinetic at all. It's like slow and but
sure. You
know, yeah.
With a purpose, but all right. Still.
Yeah, it's a nice slow burn.
Oh, okay,
so anyways.
Your number five. Yay, I know what it is now.
Yes, my number five is Moonlight.
Which
However,
we still have to wait for.
Also on someone else's list. So we are going to pass it along back
right.
to Ralph.
So it was my number seven, Moonlight, and it's yep. Luke's number five. So clearly it's Ralph's something later on. So
Yay. We'll see where it is. That being said, my number four a little movie that came out way earlier in the year that I got a chance to rewatch this, and because I rewatched it, it made my list. And that movie is Hail Caesar. This movie is directed by the Coen brothers, starring Josh Brolin, George Clooney, Edwin Rich or whatever, Ralph Fiennes, ScarJo, Tilda Swinton, because Tilda Swinton, Channing Tatum, because Channing Tatum. yeah, so it's really... So the first time I saw this movie, and I think we all saw this together.
I'm so glad you put this. We didn't see it together. I saw it by myself.
Then me and Luke saw this together.
I remember I had to yell at kids that were really being annoying, and I yelled at them to move to the front.
Oh, that's right. You told us the story.
Yeah.
Luke and I saw this together, and we had a... I don't think we came out loving the movie.
Right. Like most Coen Brother movies, you have to watch it again. You have to let it like seep in somehow. I don't know why.
I ended up watching this like maybe a couple weeks ago, and then I just... Man, I fell in love with this movie, and I caught everything. I caught a little, just maybe not everything, because if I really watch it a third time, I'm pretty sure I'll catch even more. But I caught a lot what they wanted to say in the movie, like the things that they're hinting towards. It's a really funny movie, and it's a really well done movie.
What was the other movie this year that came out that was set in the same area, Hollywood old style?
It was the one with the what's it called? The guy from Breaking Bad, Trumbo. No,
or was that? No, that was last year. No, it's Cafe Society.
Cafe Society. It was that same time.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed, especially the performance by Josh Brolin. I think Josh Brolin sells this, and that ending also with George Clooney acting as an actor in a movie. Which is super meta. The whole movie's meta. But he does this amazing job where Oscar does this. He's the one who brought it up to me, and I remember it, where he's like, he almost sells you that he's doing such a great job doing this last scene, and he's putting his whole heart into it, and then he forgets the line. And then he's like, oh, let's restart.
Which is like a big, like, cynical point of view of the Coens, because they see Hollywood tropes as funny, as maniacal, as cynical, because they also don't trust Hollywood that much, but they know they have to work in the system. I think it says a lot about them, this movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. And I'm so glad I got to rewatch it so I could make my top 10 list, because I really thought I was just going to make, not my disappointing list, but probably not even my top 20. That being said, this is a great movie. You guys should definitely get a rewatch. I might even say it's in the upper echelon of Coen Brothers.
Oh, interesting. I that was actually on my list, too. I was thinking about, like, I wasn't sure where to gauge this movie anyways, because I would have had to rewatch it because it was so long ago.
Yeah. Oh, you never got a chance to rewatch it?
No, never did.
Yeah, I really recommend it. I bought it on iTunes. You can use my account if you want, but it's really good. I don't know if you can, actually, with all those security things.
Yeah, I don't know where I am. It'll be like a
if you get a chance,
streaming picture show.
I got to watch it on HBO, and they stream it like once a day. Or they put it on once a day on TV. So.
Gotcha. All right, so, Ralph, that's your number four. And we're on to my number four. Sorry, I almost... skip the whole number there. My number four is a film that I don't know if you guys have seen. I think, Ralph, you've seen it, but it's one of its kind, I guess, in this list. It's called The Fits. I'm going to read the description here. While training at the gym, 11-year-old tomboy Tony becomes entranced with a dance troupe. As she struggles to fit in, she finds herself caught up in danger as the group begins to suffer from fainting spells and other violent fits. And this is first time directing debut of Anna Rose Homer. And I want to say, yeah, her first, at least her first big one. And it stars Royalty Hightower as Tony. And all the other actors are kind of, all of them are not known, even Royalty Hightower. But I want to really put her name on here because she is phenomenal. She gives a performance on par with Krisha, the actually her name is also Krisha, the actor, in that movie I mentioned earlier. And I they're both very different performances, of course. I mean, one's a little girl, one's a much older woman, and they both deal with different things. But I think her physicality and what she manages to bring out in a role where she has what maybe 20 lines of dialogue, which is very surprising because the camera follows her entirely 100%, like Jackie Ruff. Okay. If you remember, yeah.
No, I remember the vids, yeah.
Yeah. And, man, it's like the mirroring of what it feels to be coming of age and the dangers, and not the dangers exactly, the dangers of the fits is just like a catalyst to explain how it feels to grow up and how it's a hard and, not just a hard thing, but a thing that you fear. And you see her fearing it because she thinks she's going to be next any minute. And, of course, she's going to be next eventually because of the fact that she's looking at these older girls who are getting the fits, being on dance crews, being sexy, being things that she's not yet.
Right.
And I think that one of my favorite scenes of the year is her already joining the dance troupe. She's learning this particular dance ensemble thing that we're teaching her in the class, and she's on the rocky steps. You know what I'm talking about? No, she's outside.
Yeah.
And she starts doing her training for boxing, which she does with her brother, I think, or her friend.
They're just regular steps, by the way. Uh-huh.
I've only seen this movie once, but I remember the scene. And she starts training for that, and she starts running up the steps, doing the boxing thing, and then it turns into the dancing ensemble thing that she's been training. And the way she, like, slowly brings on that smile, which she never smiles in the movie, like, only twice, and that's at the very end, too. Which has a very weird ending, by the way. I think it shows us everything it needs to do without a single bit of dialogue that we ever need. This movie has trimmed all dialogue fat in a good way, I think. And it's just so... and the music is so bizarre. It feels like the music score came from a horror movie. But what it does is just illustrates what she's going through as a teenager, you know, going on to a woman. So I think it's...
Yeah, I think that's a mix of a choice also. It's, you know, it's something that's going to happen, but you choose to.
Right.
So yeah, that's what's interesting.
If anything, that's probably what elevates her so highly by the end of the movie, because everyone's looking at her in a more revered way, because she's figured something.
Right.
And I don't want to spoil too much, because this is an interesting movie that no one's watching, and it's I think I also found it on Amazon Prime if you guys are interested. It's not too long either.
Yeah, this is my short list.
It's
I got to watch it, and you should
I
watch
can't
it.
Explain
it's a really
it.
Short
you have
movie.
To watch it. I can't really explain it. I'm just doing my best by showing you the highlight scene and stuff. But it is a coming of age movie. There's no violence or anything. But the fits are bizarre, and it is very daunting and haunting sometimes. And some of those imagery, it sticks. And if you pay attention to the movie will reward you. So I recommend it, The Fits. My number four. And we're on to Luke's number four, which is a movie on my fucking short list. What is it,
Luke? another coming of age. This is Edge of 17. It's nice. Pretty much a debut for director-writer Kelly Fremon Craig, I think is her name.
I think it's pronounced Debut.
Fremon?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, it's... stars Haleen Steinfeld and no one else that's more important than Woody Harrelson. But yeah, it's a coming-of-age movie that is remarkably well-written, has some of the best dialogue in any of the movies that I've watched this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this movie, and I was really surprised by this movie. And it was on my...
Oh, yeah, we all were.
It's on my top 20 for sure. I think, actually, might be 21. But, I did enjoy it a lot. I couldn't find a spot for this on my top 10.
Me too. It was on my short list for the longest time.
And I hate coming-of-age movies. Right. Everybody knows that. I just think it's like an overplayed thing these last, like, 5 years.
Well, forever. I mean, since the 80s.
Yeah, sure, they're forever, but I just feel like recently, right. Like, we need to, like, they're mm-hmm. shoving it down our throats. And especially that one year where, like, four of them came out in, like, 1 month or something.
Oh, the one with the stars in the title.
Yeah. It was just so annoying.
The one, I mean, but, yeah, okay. I remember some of them were good, though. But
some of them were good,
but
right?
This one's probably the best I can remember.
Yeah, this is an exception to all of them because this one was really good.
Right. And I, like I said, I agree with you, Luke. I'm not trying to knock the movie at all. I'm just saying, like, normally I don't like these type of movies because they're just so overplayed now. And this movie still, even though it's an overplayed genre, it still does a great job.
Anything you want to highlight about the movie, Luke, specifically?
No, aside from just the amazing banter and dialogue, it's just, you know, kind of just pictures that, you know, time frame that she's in, the main character, I think Nadine, they, you know, all she sees is her own problems, and she doesn't realize that other people around her still have their own problems, but, you know, it's all about her, and that, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree, and you know what, she convinces you so much that her problems mean the best, too, like, mean more than everybody else. That's how much we're in her head, and I think that's the real power of the movie for me. Like, you are convinced that everyone else has a problem with her, and then
yeah.
So when you realize that's obviously not true, because we should never have realized that, but it's just so convincing that you forget see, like, other people as people. That's cool. That's your number. What are we? That's your number four. So yep. Luke's number four is number the Edge of 17. I almost said the number 17. We're on to our number threes. This is the almost a home stretch here off. What's your number three?
My number three is a movie that's unique because Oscar didn't like it as much as I did, and Luke didn't get to watch it yet.
Wow.
And that movie is La La Land. This is a movie directed by Damien Chazelle, who did the wonderful movie of last year that we all loved, which was Whiplash.
2 years ago.
2 years ago, my apologies. Yeah, 2 years. Whiplash, should I say. This movie starring Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone, Rosemarie DeWitt, J.K. Simmons. And I'm going to just leave it at that, really, because it's only really Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone who are in this movie. Those other two that I mentioned, although bigger name people, they're like in three scenes. I don't. This is a musical. This is the biggest hype movie, or not the biggest hype movie. This is one of the bigger movies of the year, that's for sure. It's winning things. It's going to get nominated for sure for a bunch of things. No doubt about it in my mind. There's a lot of critics who either really hate this movie, or really love it. And Oscar and I got into a discussion in one of the podcasts not too long ago about it in December, and I really love this movie. I really enjoyed. I can't get most of the music out of my head. I almost teared up at one of the scenes. I have to, like, tell myself. I mean, not even one. A couple of the scenes, but one specifically. Like, I had to, like, tell my manhood to hold back.
The audition?
To man the fuck up.
To man the fuck up. no, for me it was the last one. The very last.
Oh,
the very ending. The audition was one of the ones there. I just told myself, like, don't do it. And you're like, okay. But the last one, I was just like, don't you dare do it, you big pussy, right? And I didn't do it because I was in the theater. But if I was at home, I probably would have just cried. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, it's such a powerful movie. Even though there is a happy ending to their stories. And
spoiler.
I don't know. What's it called? Yeah, right. I still really appreciate it. And some of the music numbers do amazing. And a lot of people are saying this is like, it's like a, I honestly see this as an Emma Stone movie more than a Ryan Gosling movie, or more of a couple. I kind of feel like we follow more of the Emma Stone character than anybody else.
We also went over in the review.
Which we did, yeah.
I think I
don't
agree with you.
I don't want to say any more, but it was a really powerful movie to watch, to experience, and sort of like Arrival was. But this one was, it was still hopeful. And I actually, a very Hollywood movie that, I mean, it's Hollywood at its best, I would say. I enjoy it for that reason.
So, yeah.
That's all. That's La La Land. Some powerful performances.
Awesome.
Yeah. That I can't wait for you to watch.
I know. It's 12 more days, guys. 11 or 12 more days. I'll finally be able to see it. Yeah. As long as it's not snowing.
Well, let us know. I want to know. Text me when you see it.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Maybe I can get you a screener copy or something.
Wink.
Wink,
very subtle.
I know somebody who works in the industry.
Nobody in the audience knows what you're talking about. So we're on to, that's our box number three, now La La Land on my short list as well. My number three is a movie that surprised the hell out of me. One of the last movies I saw before we started making the list, last week actually I saw it. It's called Tower. It is a documentary, probably, I think it's my only one. Yeah.
This is a movie you tried to get me to watch, but I refused on purpose.
It's short too. It's
but I refused on purpose because I ended up watching OJ already, and I was like, this is making my top 10. And I was
You don't have to have one documentary. You can have multiple.
No, but I was there's so many great movies this year.
Okay. Well, I mean, we did a description here. Yeah, go ahead.
I just read it and I was like, ooh, I am intrigued.
All right.
Dude, it's such an intriguing story. I want to watch it so bad.
Animation, testimony, and archival footage combined to relate the events of August 1st, 1966, when a gunman opened fire from the University of Texas clock tower, killing 16 people and wounding like 40. It was like surprisingly a large number. This is a film by Keith Maitland, and it is a documentary, so spoilers for real life, but this is about the I forgot the guy's name again.
Don't look at me. You're looking at me for
the answer.
This
is really about the first school shooting or mass shooting in American history.
Right?
The first one ever like this, anyway. I mean, after that, I mean, then Columbine and all that. Right?
Sure.
But 1966, and the movie is so anti all of its type. This is one of a kind movie in the way that it uses rotoscope animation, kind of like a Scanner Darkly and Waking Life, to de-age, you know, to make all these victims that were a part of this, you know, not part of it, but that were victims of this massacre, the age that they were back in 1966. So they use like real interviews, but their voices are into characters of their person, but it's like de-aged, and so you're seeing a story unfolding minute by minute. On this terrible Texas day, starting at noon till like 3 or something like that. And it goes through the perspective of the cops that go into the tower or trying to help, to the store clerk that ended up at the tower by accident. It was a strange thing. Like all these little stories that go around, the pregnant woman that was lying on the street, nobody would help her because she was in the middle of like a big open field. And this other woman came and pretended to be dead next to her just to talk to her. Things like that happen in the movie. And these are wonderful stories that are like, but they only follow the victims. Then, you know, usually movies of this type tend to follow the what made this guy crazy, right?
Right.
And all this stuff. They mentioned his name once in the movie, and throughout the whole movie, I was thinking like, what was his name? I used to know his name. What was his name? And they said at the end of the movie, like, oh right, and I've forgotten again.
Yeah.
That's how much this movie doesn't give a shit about the guy. It gives a shit, and you don't even see him.
What's how many lives that were impacted?
Yeah, just the lives that he impacted, and how they all the people that survived, how they are today. The movie does splice in some of the real life footage of the people that have survived, that managed to stay alive, and all this time.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a great movie. I'm almost spoiling too much, but I know it's real life. But you have to see it. It's of a piece. It makes a very human movie, almost like a cinematic movie out of real life, in a good way. So that's Tower. And yeah, you can find it on VOD for streaming and renting.
Hey, buddy, got a lot of feedback going on over there.
What?
Buddy in Colorado.
What about Colorado?
He's got feedback going on over there.
Yeah, I think it's him.
Feedback?
Yeah, we got a lot of static.
Yeah.
Oh, I get a lot of static from you guys, too, but I'm just dealing with it.
Okay.
Oh, you're telling us to deal with it?
I've been dealing with it, yeah.
I think he's moving around.
Yeah,
moving around. It's okay. It's okay.
It's probably, yeah. Anyway, that's my number three, Tower. I'm going to have to edit that shit out now.
Why?
Because it's weird.
All right, go ahead. I don't know.
Not the static, just us talking about static.
I know, that's the best part.
Fine, I'll leave it in. Audience, enjoy. We're on to Luke's number three, which is going to be another twofer.
Right.
What is your number three, Luke?
Well, my number three was, you know, my rolling joke was that this was going to be my number one movie of the year. And I heard that.
I know. I was so surprised. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah. Because last year I did the same thing for Star Wars. But
yeah.
And that made my number one. But however, this year, my number three is Rogue One. It did not meet the top one slot.
Right. Which was my number seven of the year. Or eight. Eight. My apologies. Yeah, what did you think?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, it introduces a whole new cast of people that you're probably never going to go see again because they're dead. But it also gives a nice groundwork to everything that happens before A New Hope. And it kind of adds substance to that story and the rebellion and everything that they had to go through just to get those Death Star plans.
Yeah,
I should mention real quick before you guys get too far ahead. And obviously, it didn't make my list, but we did review this for a bonus episode, I think, for the month of December. And so for those who donated, which was, I think, one person or zero, might have been zero. We're just starting. Doesn't matter. No one has it. So it'll come out in 4 months or so from now. So we did review this already, but no one knows about it yet. So just putting that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I completely agree with Luke here with that whole scenes and stuff. How it just... it makes New Hope a better movie for me, honestly. It adds a lot more to that movie. A big complaint that I heard from audience members, not critics, is that, because critics are, I guess, smarter, is that everybody dies. And I was like, yeah, what did you expect? Like, we didn't see them. We didn't see them in 4, 5, and 6 or mentioned anywhere. Like, you know, and they even mentioned that, I think, in 4 is like, yeah, a lot of people died to get these death plans, and they fucking show you that a lot of people died. And the big thing about this movie is we see the wars in Star Wars. There is a huge war going on that that Lucas kind of shields from us in some of the movies, because we follow the Skywalker, you know. But we do see a lot of the wars, but I think in this one it's very pronounced. I don't know how you feel about that, Luke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I really enjoy this. I think it's such a great accompaniment to Episode 4. And, yeah, I mean, it's just powerful acting. I do have some gripes with the movie. That's why I didn't make it higher.
Oh.
But at the same time, it was just such a fun ride nonetheless.
Yeah, no, I did have gripes with it too, especially like the first couple of minutes, the constant switching from place to place. I mean, it's so unlike a Star Wars movie, you know?
Right, exactly. Well, they started off right away without, you know,
the
rolling,
crawl.
The crawl. So
right.
Yeah, but it's definitely a good thing, you know. It's going to fill in this for, you know, Star Wars universe, and hey, it's making them money.
Of course it is. It's Star Wars. I mean,
yeah, they'll never not make money.
Exactly. God bless merchandising.
I guess.
Get number three.
So that's your number three. Rogue One: A Star Wars Story, and it's Luke's Roth's number 8.
Yeah.
Sweet. And this is unprecedented, but our number 2s are all the same.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
Luke, Roth. What is me, Oscar? Why not? what is our number 2?
Our number 2 is Sing Street.
Damn straight.
That's right.
Anyone got the IMDb thing up?
You're welcome for that one.
A quick IMDb. It is a boy growing up in Dublin during the 1980s escapes his strained family life by starting a band to impress the mysterious girl he likes. This movie starring a bunch of nobodies and a bunch of somebodies. What's it called? Ferdia? Walsh Pilo, which is Connor. Aidan Gillen, which is, what's his name? A Littlefinger, is in this movie.
Oh, right.
Maria Doyle Kennedy, Jack Renner, and Kelly Thornton. These are all people that just are a bunch of Irish people.
This is our first review, I think, was Sing Street, or second.
No, we mentioned it, I think, once.
No. We reviewed this second show.
Yeah, we did a review.
Oh, it's our second. Yes, you're right, exactly.
Yeah, we did review Sing Street.
I'm pretty sure Luke takes credit for showing us this
making
movie that
you guys
we were going to watch
it?
Regardless.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to see this movie anyway, because John Carney did Once, and I love Once.
Yeah, so do I.
So I knew this guy was making this movie. I'm glad that Luke picked it for that show, though. It's great, because I wanted to see it anyway.
Yeah, I would say this is my most listened soundtrack of the year.
Drive it like you fucking stole it.
I mean, it's such a great soundtrack. Everything about everything 80s. It's such a great movie. I'll start off and you guys can just add on and I'll leave it. But I really enjoy this. It's a coming of age. Go figure.
Yeah, definitely. Another great one for this year.
Right. Yeah, it's like
it's
those
a coming
movies,
of age,
Rob.
But it's like a music. Shut the fuck up. It's like a music also. Music heavy. It's not a musical because there's just music in it. But I love watching these kids come up with you see their influences, right? And then they're like, let's mimic that. But at the same time, like, which is what anybody would do, right? And then they come up with their own version, and it's so greatly done. So I really enjoy it, and I think my favorite scene is there's the Driver Like You Stole It scene when he plays when they play the concert or the show at
School.
And it's such a great scene.
So good.
Seeing what he visioning what he wants the music video to look like, and or what he wants also his life to be. It's so well done. I really enjoyed that scene so much. At first, it kind of takes you aback because you're like, "What's going on?" And then you're like, "Oh my god!" Like, "Oh wow, this is so well done." And I really enjoyed the movie for that. Anybody else can chime in.
Luke, I'd say you go next.
Well, what can I say that you haven't said? Fuck. I don't know.
The end credits are awesome, right?
Right. Yeah, I've watched this movie, I think, about 3 or 4 times already.
Yeah, it's on Netflix too, by the way. Anybody wants to see
it? Oh, I own it, so.
Yeah, me too. Obviously, I pre-ordered the fuck out of it.
I had to own it. I mean, it's amazing. Great music. It also kind of gives you, like, quick lesson in, like, 80s music trends and what really does at the time.
It really does,
yeah.
Yeah. So, it's really good. Yeah, especially for somebody that likes music.
Makes me enjoy Duran Duran and more, and like Phil Collins less. Though it didn't really do anything to do, like, it just, the older brother said something, I'm like, I guess you're right.
He said
I don't have my own fucking opinions on this music. Anyway,
it's like, no woman can truly love a man who listens to Phil Collins.
Right, like that, yeah. Right. Like, that line did it for me, like, okay, fuck Phil Collins. Anyway. My 2 cents here that you guys haven't said is this movie is probably the most it is the most emotionally satisfying movie of the year, and I mean satisfying in that it made me the happiest, it made me the most unabashedly like yell it from the clouds kind of movie. You know the kind of movie you're proud of, the kind of movie that you think is kind of hokey and schlocky to be proud of in front of people, but I don't care. You know, I guess that's the best feeling I can express to Sing Street. And I think Sing Street also manages to be nostalgic by completely being original.
Yeah.
Which is so rare.
That's so
rare.
Yeah.
I mean, it is something that I think that, what's that show that came out? Stranger Things.
Sure.
Was really close in doing, but in the end, they mimicked more than they originated. But this movie originally made all this music. It's set in Dublin. It's not even set in New York, like all these other movies, or some small town Midwest America. You know, it's so of its kind, and yet very much 80s. And in a good way that I can't even begin to express. And then the relationship between Connor and his older brother, I mentioned in the review way back, listen to that show, really, how much I love that relationship, and I love how... what he was spewing, even though some of it was very much of his age that he's saying.
Sure.
Like, I still found it very apt and true. I really love that stuff. All the scenes are pretty great. And you're right, the prom musical, Drive It Like You Stole It, is probably my highlight of the year. I think about that scene a lot. I would go on YouTube and watch it, honestly. Just that one scene. So, yeah, Sing Street, our number twos. Very nice. And, Raf, we're going back to you for your number one. Are you ready for our number ones? And your number one is also another movie that we've all had, but in different times.
Yes.
Which so, of course, obvious. You have it on your number one, so you get to talk about it first. What is that movie, Ruff?
Okay, there it goes. That movie is a movie that we all got to watch together in the whitest audience I've ever seen.
Right.
Is Moonlight. Moonlight, this movie was... I mean, opposite of Sing Street, but as a like happy-go-lucky, I guess, in Sing Street, sort of.
Yeah.
But this is a movie directed by Barry Jenkins. I don't know. This movie did something amazing for me. I only got to see it once, and I really wanted to rewatch it. But it was one of those movies that it was just in like 2 theaters in Chicago, and like one of them wasn't even in Chicago. It was farther away than where I like to go, but whatever. It's such a powerful story, and obviously Oscar and Luke will chime in here a little later, but getting to see this man, this boy who becomes a young man who eventually becomes a man, and seeing those 3 different point of views in his life, in his lifetime, and seeing how he became where he got to, and how he struggles through all those it's a very impactful movie. It's something that we never get to watch. It's through a black life that we normally don't see a coming of age movie through the black perspective. And this is like all in black lens, they don't shy away from a lot of things. And they bring up a lot of issues that one has to deal, and you see how much struggle this man has to go through, he struggles through all three parts of his life, some more than others,
yeah.
But you see how a certain influence kind of shapes him, and where he gets to in his life, and but still seeing such a. Like the type of person he ended up becoming, is such a rewarding thing at the very end. I almost wanted to cry a little bit, but at the same time, I just felt like this was such a powerful performance from all three actors, because these are all three different actors. It's not like Boyhood where it's the same kid and they just filmed it 17 years in the making or whatever. It's all three different actors who look very similar and play this one person in the movie. Yeah, that's. I'll add more as you guys talk to it. What did you guys think, Luke?
Yeah, Luke, you had it on your number five, which was mine's was on my number 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, 8. No, 9. Yeah. 6, 7. Sorry, I can't count. Okay. It was my number 7. So yours was more first. So you go ahead and
yours was more first.
Yeah, it's one of those like eye opening movies because this is a perspective, like as Ralph said, we don't normally see, nor do we. Are we exposed to, because obviously we're not black, we don't live in poverty, and we are not homosexual. Oscar yeah. pending.
Oscar.
Aw, thank you.
Good one. Yeah, I didn't even bring that up. I didn't even bring that up.
But it's powerful. It's, you know, it shows you the struggle that he has to go through in all the stages of his life, and it's something that really resonates with you because you're able to see something that's real, something that happened, that is happening in the world, even though you're not exposed to it, you can yeah. still feel for it.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I think the biggest power of this movie is, it's like that Roger Ebert quote that a lot of people have been re-quoting lately, ever since Life Itself came out, honestly, the documentary, where they say that movies are an empathy machine. Their purpose in many ways, at least the best ones, are to put us in shoes of people that we would never know. We would never recognize cultures and people and types of people and situations that we've never and will never experience ourselves. And I think this movie is the embodiment, almost to a T, of that feeling. Of not just like, I mean, poverty, black, and gay, all three things that we're not and we never experienced, and even there's different cities, but Florida, I think, somewhere.
Miami,
sorry.
It's a big city.
I know Florida's a state, but I'm saying somewhere.
Sure, but I mean, it's a big city, and it's Miami, and a part of Miami that we never see in any other movie.
And it's so heartwarming. The movie is surprisingly delicate and very well lit in such a striking way, but somber way. Is that the best way I can describe it?
Yeah.
I
mean, you feel for this right, Chiron,
and that conversation in the diner at the end, and when he says about how he's a drug dealer now, and his the boyfriend to be's reaction, spoiler alert, what he cooks for him and how he does it with such care. I mean, it's a perfect film, almost a perfect film. It's really good. I know it's my number 6 or whatever, and I kind of went with more enjoyment factors after the fact, like for my later movies. But at the same time, though. I think it proves the powerhouse of movies this year. Because right before that is Krisha, man, for me, for my number 7 or something. So, like, there's a lot of good fucking powerhouse, like, character piece movies in here.
Sure.
So Moonlight's definitely one of them. I don't, it could be my number 1 any other year, honestly. So, yeah, I agree with you guys. Moonlight's awesome. That's your number 1, Luke. I mean, Ralph.
Ralph.
Your number 5, Luke, and my number 6.
7.
7.
Numbers are hard.
Yeah, well, I didn't number the list on here. I just happened to.
Yeah, if you count from up to down.
Right, I just went down from the thing. It doesn't matter. All right, so on to my number 1, which hasn't been mentioned. I don't know if anyone has seen it here besides myself.
I really want to see this movie, but I just don't know where
didn't I give it to you in a thumb drive? I'm positive I gave it to you.
Maybe. I have to go through a lot of stuff.
Okay. It's called The Handmaiden. Rafa, did you see this movie yet?
I did not. You did not give it to us in a thumb drive. I have heard about this movie, and I have wanted to watch this movie.
Yeah,
just because I know it's such a critically acclaimed movie.
So we live. I work retail at a Starbucks in the suburbs from Chicago, and the movie theater right next door to my at the shopping center nearby. It's a very Korean neighborhood. So they had The Handmaiden months before it was famous.
Nice.
Because they have Korean first run movies there.
Thanks for inviting us.
No, I never got to saw it. I was going to see it, but I never did. I was like, it just looks awesome. It's Park Chan-wook, the man who did Old Boy, Thirst, the one who did Stoker, which a first American movie that was really good too. The guy does not know how to do a bad movie and often does a great movie, in my opinion, because Thirst and Old Boy are like my top two for him, you know. So I went into this movie and I saw it, and I'm like, man, this movie is it is the height of a man who has perfected a certain craft of genre filming, and not even more than that even. And I'm gonna read the description, which is very short, and also, like, no matter how I explain this movie, unless I spoil the very last 30 minutes, this movie is so packed with information. But a woman is hired as a handmaiden to a Japanese heiress, but secretly she is involved in a plot to defraud her. And I do want to mention, what is her name? Lady Hideko is played by Min-hee Kim, or Kim Min-hee. I don't know. I know that IMDb writes their first and last names differently than they actually say it. What's her name? And Suki is played by Tae-ri Kim. A lot of Kim. South Korea. Anyway, so this movie is I'm trying to think of an example of another movie that has such convoluted plotting and twist after twist, but that actually makes sense. Everything is every single thing is foreshadowed.
I was about to say Old Boy, and then you said makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense, right? Well, Old Boy, I think, does make sense, but I think that's a revenge film of emotion.
Sure.
This movie isn't quite that. It is, you could almost say, it's a sexual reawakening and a deconstruction of the men that tear down the women, so to speak, in that age, because it's a period piece also, set somewhere in World War II era after that. In Korea, and it's this movie will make you rethink certain words, like bells. You'll never look at bells the same way again. You'll never look at a toothache the same way again. Hell, you'll never see a toothache or toothache soothing as so sexual as in this movie. And I can't. You have to see it to understand what I'm saying, and it does it. And there are some great exemplary moments where, like, you where certain settings and rooms that you are familiar in the movie, because the movie is long too, it's like 2+ hours. Certain rooms feel very familiar in the movie, like the reading room. And when you see it, you know what I mean. In one moment, the reading room means something very bad and horrible. In another movie, it means like a phoenix rising from the ashes for the characters that you love. And in another meaning, it means a betrayal of one of the characters. Like, different things mean different things by the course of the movie. And it's three different stories of the same story going on through three different perspectives. So the movie does cut and go back. Kind of like Jackie Brown, maybe, or something like that. I don't know. So, yeah, I totally recommend it. The Handmaiden is a surprising hit. It was going to be, like, my number three for the longest time. Then I saw it again, and I'm like, fuck yes, I'm a number one. Park Chan-wook still has it always. I recommend it. That's my number one, The Handmaiden. We're on to Luke, your last one, sir. What is your number one?
My number one is Snowden,
which was my number 10.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, you speak first though.
It is one of the out of the most recent ones, one of Oliver Stone's most recent best pictures. The stuff he's done before is kind of lackluster because compared to his earlier stuff. I feel this is an amazingly acted movie on behalf of Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He nailed that role as Snowden to the point where when real Snowden shows up at the end, you're just like, oh shit, like, took you a second. It is also very current, and it talks about a lot of issues that we have, but it's
also too current.
Right. It's also, he didn't try to lean one way or the other. I felt it was very down the line. So.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen it like 6 times already.
Fuck you, really?
Yeah.
Wow, I've just only bought seen it once.
Oh. Yeah, and I've also watched and purchased Citizen 4 again, so.
Wait,
watched
again?
That twice. Yeah.
That's an HBO, I think. That's why I haven't bought it, because it's an HBO one, and I have the subscription, so I can just watch it there.
Actually, it wasn't available when I was looking for it on HBO.
No, but it's one of their movies. It should be on there.
It wasn't.
What?
Yeah.
Some bullshit. I'm pretty sure it's one of their movies. I don't know.
It was,
that.
But for a certain time, they took it off.
Huh. I guess they must have borrowed it to somebody else, I guess, maybe. I don't know how it works. Fuck, man, lawyers. Anyway, so let me say my little piece about it. I don't know, like, I was trying to, because one of the other, I'm not really into Criterius 100% into making a top 10, like, favorite or best movies of the years. But I think that if I had to have one that encapsulates a lot about 2016, some of these films may prove to be that. And I think Moonlight is one. Snowden is definitely one. I think Tower, because of how it relates to today. And if you see the ending of Tower, it feels very, very similar to some stuff today. And Sing Street, which goes about, you know, like I said before, the nostalgia era that we're in, that we seem to just can't get out of, you know.
No, we can't get out of it at all.
And Sing Street is the best of its kind, of course, but like, and we still love it, clearly. But it's still there all the time. So I think that some of these movies represent our current age. And I think Snowden, it is the biopic, the history, the modern history, the political movie of our era, all rolled into one movie. And I think the more I thought back on Oliver Stone's movie, the more I liked it. And even though I wanted to rewatch it definitely for sure to make sure that it would stay on this list, I at one point I was like, no, I don't think I need to rewatch it. I think I got what I wanted. And I'll rewatch it someday for sure. But like, I think I got enough out of it that I think what Oliver Stone's doing is much more subtle than he's used to, because it ain't Natural Born Killers or JFK where it's like hammering on your head, you know, in a good way, but still not doing that. I think it's much more, it looks like a more palatable movie that he is just trying to educate the masses, so to speak. He is trying to, he's made a movie that is, that can be eaten by or drunk by or whatever, or consumed easily by the mass audiences, to wake them up to a lot of the stuff that people are not watching and not reading up on, which is Citizen 4, for example. This movie already made like much more money than Citizen 4, I'm sure. So like the very fact that that's a fact, that's weird, you know. And this movie adds a lot more than that documentary does, because of course the artistic license to take a life, what is it, 10-year period, right, roughly?
Something like that.
I think it's done really well. Yeah, so I agree with you, Luke. Snowden's pretty good.
Yep.
Although so he thinks it's amazing. You think it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It is amazing, yeah.
I mean,
amazingly.
I mean, there's nine better ones out there.
It's
anyway.
One of those movies I want everyone to watch, because it's going to show them what's really going on and, you know, have them have that internal discussion of what he did was right or what he did was wrong. Yeah. I mean, I'm currently working with a guy. I just mentioned the name Snowden, and he's just like appalled by everything
really?
That he's done.
You're kidding.
And I'm like, you need to watch this movie. Like super hardcore. He hates him. And I'm like, you need to see this movie because it's really damn good. But just because damn. It's Snowden, he won't even touch it. But yeah, I think it's a powerful movie, and it is. I
Remember,
think it's
you
like,
chose his job, right?
Yeah. I think it's like, I don't know, I guess when JFK came out, that was like huge for them. And that even, I think what, it opened up the investigation again. And this is one of those things that, you know, it's, we're using
yeah,
it
he's
to move
he's good
you.
At this stuff. Actually, I'm watching his, that short run series on Netflix, The Untold History of the American History or something. I started watching that. He narrates the whole show, and it's pretty good so far. Not quite in the same
The Untold History of the United States.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm with you, man. So, yeah, Snowden, we all agree. Yeah. And those are our top 10 films of 2016. I hope you dug it like I done did, because I did. Now let's talk honorable mentions. We have those, right?
Do you want to recap our top 10s or no, like we did with the first 6 through 10?
Oh, yeah, we totally can. That'd be good. Luke, you start us off then. What's your 10 through 1?
10 through 1, okay. So starting with 10 is I Saw the Light. 9 is Warcraft. 8 is Where to Innovate Next. 7 is Cafe Society. 6 is Doctor Strange. 5 is Moonlight. 4 is Edge of 17. 3 is Rogue One. Number 2 is Sing Street. And number 1 is Snowden.
My number 10 is Snowden. Then it's Green Room, Krisha, Moonlight, The Lobster, The Witch, The Fitz. A lot of the's in the middle there. Tower. Then Sing Street was my number 2. And my number 1 is The Handmaiden. Ruff?
My number 10 is The Moana. Number 9 is The O.J. Made in America. 7 is The Dresser. Or The Dresser. The Arrival. The Green Room. The Hail Caesar. The La La Land.
The Sing Street.
The Sing Street. And The Moonlight.
You skipped Rogue One.
You did skip Rogue One.
I did skip Rogue One.
Yeah, I noticed that. Like, what? Did you switch them? And then you didn't tell me after the Rogue One.
Sorry, I was trying to get the thuzz in there.
The Rogue One?
The thuzz and everything.
Yeah, there's a lot of thuzz in there.
No. Hey, you're so messed up for bringing up that story. You're so messed up. Man, do you even realize how sick in the head you are for bringing that up?
Oh, I'm sorry you feel guilty for never caring about anyone but yourself.
Oh, yeah, no, that's exactly it.
Face it, you're obsessed with yourself.
Oh, my
God. Your report card on the refrigerator like you're 5 years old. Hey, everybody, look, I pooped in the big potty. God, do you even know what it feels like to love another human being?
Oh, man, you are so dramatic, okay? Hey, life isn't fair sometimes, Nadine, okay? Get over it.
I swear to God.
All right. So let's talk about honorable mentions. Let's start with you, Ruff, since you... Yep, let's start with you.
So honorable mentions are basically my 11 through 20.
Yeah, you say your 11 through 20, I guess.
Zootopia, such a great movie. Kubo and the Two Strings. Sully, I really enjoyed Sully.
I know you did. I like it too.
13th, I struggled to try to put this on my...
Me too.
I made my 30 list. It's a documentary, Luke. You should watch it. L... Powerful movie. Swiss Army Man.
Yeah, I wanted that in there too, but like, no, I can't justify it.
Right, exactly. Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping. Life Animated. The Fitz. And Jackie. Yes. I love the performance of Natalie Portman and Jackie.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't find, like, to put the movie in there.
Yeah. So. Luke, what's your honorable mentions?
Okay, in no way, shape, or form are these actually numbered, but this is pretty much anywhere from 11 to 25. Green Room, Captain America Civil War, Swiss Army Man, California High, Poverty Inc., Kubo and the Two Strings, Deadpool, Arrival, Hunt for the Wilder People, Life Animated, For the Love of Spock, Lamb, Zootopia, Sully, and Out of Print.
Nice.
That's some where all the documentaries went.
All the documentaries went in there. I did rank my 11 through 20, but I made up to 30. But here it goes. My 11 through 20. So basically, this is my top 10 of the first 10 that didn't exist. Ralph, don't say anything.
I did 20. Luke does 25. Oscar does 30.
Yep, I do 30. That's why I'm doing it last, because I know you guys will be shorter than mine. My 11 through 20 is Jackie. Then is Swiss Army Man. Arrival. Fences. Love Fences. Obviously not too much. American Honey, Look Who's Back, which is a German comedy about Hitler coming back to 2015. It's really funny. The Edge of 17 is on there. Then it's Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping. Then it's Zootopia, and then my 20th is Nocturnal Animals, with some extra ones would be like La La Land, made my 20 to 30. 0 Days, L, Manchester by the Sea, Moana, 13th, Hail Caesar, Last Days in the Desert, Christine, which I saw last week, Camera Person, also I saw last week, pretty good, April in the Twisted World, The Dresser, and 10 Cloverfield Lane. Yeah. Those are all fucking great movies that I wouldn't mind being normally top 10s, you know? Like, if those previous 10s didn't exist. Let's talk about... some of the movies that did not work for us, guys. Some of the films that, for the most part, you know, in layman's terms, fucking sucked. So, why don't we start with...
I really don't have a list
you
for
don't
that.
Can you think of any?
No, I only watched good movies.
That's a lot.
That's objective as shit. I don't know about that, Luke. I'm going to go with I don't know on that one. Then I'll mention some. How about that?
Go ahead and mention some. I got one right now.
Okay, what do you got? Yeah, this is more wide open discussion anyway. We don't have to have a list.
Allegiant. Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
Batman v Superman.
Regression.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Forgot about that.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, I almost don't remember any plot in that movie anymore. Actually,
Yoga Hosers.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's, whose fault was that?
Mm-hmm. Wiener.
Oh yeah, you didn't like Wiener. I was the only one who liked it that much. Yeah. All right, Rob, you got a few.
Oscar loves Wiener.
No, I can't. I can't think of anything right now. I'm pulling up my stuff right now.
I got you while you think about it. So I'm going to mention the actual bad ones, okay? Because there's some movies I didn't agree with, but they're not bad either. You know what I'm saying? Complete Unknown. I'm going to say that one real fast. Miles Ahead, which is that Don Cheadle starring movie, which I liked his acting, but the rest of the movie I did not agree with. 31, which is Rob Zombie's movie. I don't know. I think he tried too hard. Louder Than Bombs didn't work for me. I'm sorry, Luke, but I saw the light. Even though I did enjoy the music and the acting, I think that's all I had going for it from my taste. Elvis and Nixon sucked.
I got this.
Elvis and Nixon sucked. It sucked. Magnificent Seven, the remake of Blair Witch or whatever the fuck that was. Yoga Hosers, Nerve. Nerve was just there. We talked about that. The Purge, Election Year. Jack Reacher, Never Go Back. Never make another movie, please. The Infiltrator was very fucking boring for me, even though it looked to be really good. 13 Hours was just like whatever. Southbound was a sucky horror movie that tried to be like fucking VHS again. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, The Green Destiny, I don't know, but it just fell flat, even though it had some good actors in it. Batman v Superman, of course, do we even have to fucking talk about that anymore? The Wave, which is like,
God.
Swedish, I don't know, Finland, one of those fucking countries. Their version of 2012, like their disaster movie, right? And it was just there. The Invitation, I didn't really care a fuck about. From the guy who did A Hijacking, he did a movie called A War, which I didn't care for either. Suicide Squad, Star Trek Beyond was, no, that was good. I take that back. Everybody Wants Him, I didn't get why people love that movie. I really don't get it at all.
Oh, yeah, same here. It was not that great.
Yeah, I don't understand. Alice Through the Looking Glass was just like almost an animated movie. Everyone's so CGI'd in that movie. It's an animated movie. I don't understand that one either. X-Men Apocalypse sucked balls.
Oh, there you go. That's the one.
That's the one you want to mention?
That's the one I want
to
mention.
X-Men Apocalypse, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
Colonia
not
was kind
bad.
Of boring. Money Monster, what the hell?
Yep.
High Rise, I did not understand. Yeah.
I got more for you.
Yeah.
I got a Hologram for the King. That was...
Oh, yeah. I did not see that.
Brothers Grimsby. Yeah, that was bad.
I didn't see that either. Some of these I had to not
right.
see.
Money Monster, I totally agree with you 100% there. Gods of Egypt, I liked it, but it's a really bad movie.
Yeah.
Ride Along too. Just don't bother.
The Ride Along,
yes. Yeah. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot didn't do it for me.
Oh, really? That movie was fun for me.
Yeah. Yeah. But you said it.
Let's talk about a little bit of overrated movies. Movies that did great that you don't understand why. I have one here is Love and Friendship. Anyone heard of that one? Start by the girl who's in the Underworld movies, Kate Beckinsale, and she is the best part of that movie. And there is some great dialogue, but I don't care why people love this movie. Birth of a Nation,
Birth of a Nation is
kind of overrated for me.
Overrated for sure.
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I think there's a lot more problems with that movie than there should have been for the money. Suicide Squad. I'm only mentioning Suicide Squad and Batman v Superman. Not so much Batman v Superman, but Suicide Squad for sure, because of it hit with audiences in a more positive way than we ourselves think and our friends. Obviously, we don't think the same, but like in general, people love that movie or like that movie, and I don't get why. Eye in the Sky. I don't know why it was so like that movie. I liked it.
It's overrated for sure.
Overrated. I liked it,
but it's nothing spectacular.
Yeah. Anyway, those are my main ones. Everybody Wants Some same thing. I already said that. Anybody have any like movies that you feel like were way overrated?
I think for me, critically acclaimed overrated was The Lobster.
Oh really?
Huh. Yeah.
You mean my number five?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Not that it's bad.
Not that it's bad.
No, I'm kidding. It's fine.
It's my top 20, but I just I just felt overrated. Like I did a lot of talk behind this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, an hour? Here it comes. The
right, exactly.
Yeah, I hear you.
I had another movie, but I already forgot. So,
you had any, Luke, that you think were overrated from the year?
Not that I could really justify.
What about underrated? Let's talk about movies that no one saw that people really should have, or that should have been bigger than they were.
Doctor Strange? Totally underrated movie.
No, it's not. It made a lot of money. It was perfectly normally rated.
Warcraft, even though I made a lot of movie in China, I think it's a really good movie.
Oh, yeah. Put that in my overrated, actually.
I got one. I got one for you for the Independence Day Resurgence.
Wait, that was underrated?
Is a piece of shit movie?
No, overrated.
It wasn't overrated. It was no one liked that movie. Didn't make any money. Yeah,
a lot of the people I work with were just like, "Oh, the movie's great." And I'm like,
"Stop working in bumfuck Colorado." Then
this is before Colorado. This is
yeah,
Chicago.
Well, it's because you're working with people who watch one movie a year, and they
I don't know a single
like
person that saw it except for Brian, who co-hosted the week, and he said that he hated the fuck out of it. but one, two, one. That's funny. Underrated, though, I would say London Has Fallen. I kind of like that movie.
London Has Fallen is a good movie.
Better than The Olympus, I'm sure. Swiss Army Man. I mean, that was in major
Swiss
theaters.
Army Man, for sure, yeah.
Swiss Army
no
Man,
one's
yep.
fucking saw it.
Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yeah,
Hello, My Name is Doris.
Hello, My Name is Doris. Like our mom, our movie mom, one. Rough.
Yeah. Triple
Edge
Nine.
Edge of 17.
Yeah.
Yep. Triple Nine for sure. Triple Nine is a big movie that
should
have been
bigger.
Triple
Nine is such a good movie,
It's
too.
Such a good movie. I don't know what's wrong with people. The Dresser, I would say, is a big one, but I don't even know how people would hear of it.
It's a TV movie. Exactly.
Luke didn't even fucking mention it to me. I would never heard of it.
I think Luke stumbled on that movie.
Yeah, he just fucking... Yeah, it's a good stumble. Hush, which is on Netflix. You and I, Rafi, really like that. I think it made your top five of the
Nice
year.
Guys was another...
No, the movie was big.
I got one.
I heard it. Yeah.
What? April and the Extraordinary World.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no one fucking saw that movie either.
And the Extraordinary World? Extraordinary?
I'm saying it's Twisted now. I'm just going to say Twisted World, the original European title.
Sure.
Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. I know that it's a Tim Burton movie, and it probably made some money.
It wasn't
But everyone's kind of off on Tim Burton, but I think that movie was really good. I mean, not really super good, but it was, like, pretty good. And to watch, I would rewatch that movie again.
Creative Control? I actually like Creative Control.
I know you did. Yeah. I don't remember anything about it now, so I can't say.
Okay.
Snowden is another one that did not make enough money. Like, that movie should be at everyone's fucking watch list. Hail Caesar also, because a lot of people left it out because they don't know what to make of this weird Coen's brother movie. You know, they always make one weird one. And
you mean a Coen's brother movie?
Yeah, and I guess. It's like their Burn After Reading, right?
Yeah.
It's like another of that. People don't know what to do with it. Let's talk about missed opportunities. This is the big one for us, for some of us anyway. Movies that you wanted to watch that you did not have a chance to watch.
Tower.
Start with Roth, then.
Tower, for sure. Snowden. I just didn't get to watch those.
A Snowden Tower, yeah.
A Snowden Tower. Whatever else is on Oscars and Luke's top 10.
I bought Tower. I told you where Keisha was. I don't know what to tell you.
I know. I mean, those are two. I got to watch OJ, which is good for me. But
You could watch four movies in that time span.
Yeah,
I could have watched a lot more than four movies.
That's true.
Man. It's just those. I think Snowden is probably my biggest miss.
Oh, you didn't see Snowden?
No, I didn't.
I thought you had seen it.
No, I haven't seen it at all. No, I think it probably would have been my top 10.
Really?
You know, I'll activate it on my iTunes so you could watch it from the Blu-ray.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
About time. Okay.
Luke, you have any missed opportunities?
Oh, tons. One right off the top of my head is Zero Days.
Oh, yes. Watch that, dude.
Oh, that's right. That's the movie you just told me about.
Jackie, La La Land, Handmaiden.
The movies you can't see because you're there.
Handmaiden, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, The Handmaiden is coming out, I think, in late January for streaming devices to buy and rent.
Okay.
And
I
can't watch it.
We'll see. I kind of want to see the Moana one because I've heard good things about it from people that have worked here. So,
Yeah. You know. I recommend that. For me, obviously, they're going to be titles that maybe are not so well known for everyone. These are the movies that I really wanted to see, mainly foreign films, because this year was very – I lacked in my foreign films watching. Usually in New Year's, I'm really up to date with all the major continents. But this year, I fell off the boat, so to speak, a little bit. So that goes with A Bigger Splash, Hitchcock Truffaut, Aquarius, Tony Erdman.
Yeah.
Son of Saul, which I know came out technically a year before, but it really came out this year. Under the Shadow, which is on Netflix now, but I didn't get a chance to watch it because it just came out on Netflix. It's like a horror movie set in one of the Middle Eastern countries, I forget. But as far as American movies or non or other movies, De Palma, the documentary about Brian De Palma, made by that famous, or I forget the guy's name, doesn't matter. Patterson, the founder, Microbe and Gasoline. You guys are so lost on it, I'm sure. Southside With You, I heard was excellent.
That's right. You mentioned it to me during our trip to Canada. Yeah,
yeah, I really want to see that. I did not get to see Assassin's Creed, even though I really want to. I did not get to see Girl on the Train, even though I know you guys did and reviewed it. Billy Lil, Halftime, Long Halftime Walk.
That's on my list, too.
Assassin's Creed and Girl on the Train are just there.
Yeah, I'm sure they are, but I still kind of want to see it. Anyway, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. I know I was really up to watch it, but it was like in theaters for like 2 weeks, and I thought it would be longer, and it wasn't, and it left.
It's just that it didn't come out when it should have come out.
Yeah.
And then it came out during everything else, and everything else is just like, we're better than you.
Yeah, so. Right, and it just took up my time. So those are and Deepwater Horizon. I heard it was excellent. Like London Has Fallen, like an excellent movie that everyone looked. It looks bad, but it's actually pretty good.
You know what?
Really? That's you were like the first to Mark rag Wahlberg, on that. Right?
I was the first to rag on it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because it looks terrible.
It's Mark Wahlberg, right?
And it's Mark Wahlberg. Of course, it looks
terrible.
There's
something about Mark Wahlberg. I just don't like watching his movies anymore.
I don't like Gerard Butler, but I like London Has Fallen.
I like Gerard.
Hey, I just saw Patriots Day with him, so.
That's right. How was that movie?
It was all right.
Way to sell them.
The best parts didn't include Marky Mark.
Oh, really? Okay. We have.
So, is that a no to the Optimus Prime?
Eh? No. We have. I was going to talk about like maybe some of our favorite scenes of the year, but it's okay. We can skip that. Not a big deal. One thing I do want to talk about is this movie was also, we talked about earlier in the beginning, at the top of the show, about movie trends, right? Like blockbusters, good documentaries, a lot of animated movies, some musical stuff. I would say the one that's a really big one is that it's a good year for villains. I don't know if you guys can harken back to it, but I really love the Civil War villain. What's his name? The dude from Inglourious Basterds.
The one that Luke and I
hated. I don't have the information in front of me. But the one that Luke and you what?
The one that Luke and I disliked.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Fuck you guys, honestly, on that
fuck
one.
You. We like comic book villains.
Zemo, yeah, Daniel Brühl's character. The best thing in Suicide Squad was Viola Davis's, Amanda Waller, the FBI character or CIA agent character. I really liked her. Ben Mendelsohn in Rogue One was a pretty goddamn good villain, I think. Ewan McGregor villain to himself in Last Days in the Desert by playing the devil to his Jesus, to his own Jesus. Samuel Jackson, he was creepy as fuck in Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Yeah, he was.
I think he was pretty memorable as a villain, and I know the little things too. Kate Winslet in 999. I don't know about that, Ralph. What do you think about that one? Is she convincing Jewish Russian mobster for you?
She worked out.
John Goodman, dude, in 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yes.
Academy Award winning thing for me on that one. I hope he wins it. Idris Elba as Shere Khan, the tiger in The Jungle Book, Ralph.
That's a voice actor.
Come on. That fucking villain. Yeah, fuck
just,
you.
He just talked.
He killed the pack. Okay, you suck.
That was an animated thing.
Nope, you're dead to me.
The tiger's
still a great villain. It's still going to be a good villain.
Yeah, I get you. I'm messing with
you. Fuck off. Patrick Stewart in Green Room, we talked a little bit about that. And Stephen Lang in Don't Breathe. Excellent villain who is like kind of a sympathetic villain until you know what he's doing with a turkey baster. If anyone who's seen that movie knows what I'm talking about. Have you guys seen it yet? Don't Breathe? Don't Breathe?
Yeah.
Okay. Do we review it together?
No.
With Jay, right?
Yeah, with Jay.
Anyway, watch it, Luke. You'll be scarred for life and the turkey baster.
No, I'll pass.
Yeah, watch it. It's good. Okay. One more on the villain thing. The Clan, which I know no one's seen yet. It's the villain is Archimedes Puccio, played by Guillermo Francella. It's a Argentinian or Chilean film. Super creepy fucking guy, I swear to God. So, I think that's it for that. One thing I want to talk about is that next time meaning in February when we start doing regular shows on this, especially you and I, Roth, we will going to talk about the Oscars. The Oscars will announce their nominations on the 24th. Obviously, this is coming out basically 5 days before, or 3 days before that announcement. But we will talk about it once it comes out. And because we love talking about Oscars, even though we know it's overrated and kind of stupid, but it's still fun to talk about.
We're all going
to
watch
pop culture, and we're going to watch it. So let's see. Yeah, and we all seem to enjoy this year, 2016, in films, even though it sucked and everything else, right? Yep. We're all in agreement here. all right, so I think that's it. You have been listening to another movie podcast. You can follow me on Twitter for movie chatter at Armin Filmmaker. That is Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke?
You can find me at Blind Noir.
Roth?
You can follow me on Twitter at Gamer Ralph. That is with two R's and an F. And you can follow me on Twitch at Sue Trauma. Figure it out how to spell it.
No one's
it's
gonna
like
Psyox.
Psyox
Trauma. No.
Spell
Sue,
fucking Sue,
Sue as in S-I-O-U-X.
Yeah. All the vowels look for the... And you can also follow on Armin Filmmaker on Letterboxd for all my movie watching habits, especially December. It's like a ton of movies. Right. And obviously
I just had enough to look
catching
at
up to everything.
Reason.
And in the middle there, I saw all the Edgar Wright movies because I was like, yes, I want to see them. Let's see. Next time in 2 weeks, Ralph, do we know what we're reviewing? I don't know. But we still have another top 10 show.
Underworld Blood Wars.
We have another week to figure out what we're going to talk about in 2 weeks from that point. But our main show is not coming up yet. Next week, though, we have our last top 10 of the year, and that is Ralph and I will do our top 10 discoveries of 2016. If you're not sure what that means, stay tuned for that show. We will describe and explain everything. It's actually a pretty fun show. I love making that particular list because it is unlike almost all the top 10 movie list or any list made in any podcast out there. So I think it's one of our originals, and it's pretty good. I think you guys will enjoy it. So stay tune for next week for that, guys. Until then, I am Oscar.
And Luke.
And Ralph.
See you later.
Look, everything in this world is running exactly on schedule. Besides, to leave, we probably have to wait until the movie's over or something.
Well, when is that going to happen?
So, and record it over there.
Fly to Colorado.
Well, we're not driving.
We're not going to take a snowcat there.
All right.
Wait. Okay. This has been Riddick. This is Chronicles of Riddick. All right, for real, we can start recording again, Luke. 5, 4, 3, 2, I fucking hate these extra mics. 1.